When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, fellow humans. Welcome to the Hot Mess Clubhouse, a podcast that celebrates funny women. I'm your trying very hard not to sound hungover host, Lucy Vine, and my guest today is the endlessly charming and lovely Tiff Stevenson. She's a stand-up comedian, actor and writer. You would definitely know her from your TV screens or the many stage shows she's done over the years. She's in the genius BBC comedy show People Just Do Nothing and my soulmate TV programme Game Face. We talk about her funniness, but also cover a range of subjects that include being a hot mess, the curse of big boobs, kink shaming, and accidentally murdering goldfish with body shop perfume. We do also get quite deep at times, and trigger warning, we do touch on suicide, so forgive us for being real human beings with real feelings about things. I hope you enjoy. Okay, hello Tiff, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? You look very sunny and you've got a nice bright orange lipstick on.
Thank you very much. I made an effort for you.
I didn't for you. So
no, you look beautiful.
I've worn a nice outfit, but I haven't done makeup.
No, you look great. You've got a tan, so that's like cheating, essentially.
It is cheating. I've just been on holiday to the Canaries, so.
Nice. Well, welcome to the Hot Mess Clubhouse. Do you consider yourself to be a hot mess?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I haven't thought about that phrase for a good few years, actually.
I'm bringing it back.
I like hot mess. I like hot mess because it suggests like sexy, carefree, throwaway, unless it's used in like a, not throwaway, throwaway. Like, but you know, like carefree, just like, yeah, sure. Come on, I'm a hot mess. I don't know if it's been like, is it viewed as a more disparaging thing now?
No, I don't think so. I think it's been reclaimed. That's what I'm trying to do. It's
good. Well, I'm a mess as in that I'm, in some parts of my life, I've really got it together. And in others, I'm all over the place. I'm always late. I was late for this. No. So there's that.
Well, I like people being late because I'm pathologically early to everything.
Right. So it just That's puts a bit me passive aggressive, mate.
Yeah, no, right.
Pathologically early is great. I've been really trying, actually, because yesterday I had such a day of, like, disaster after disaster. Like, I nearly missed my flight.
Oh, have you literally just come back from your holiday yesterday?
No, I've been back from my holiday a week, but I flew up to Scotland to film a TV show yesterday. So I sort of flew up one day, flew back the next day, and I got my timings. I sort of, when I'm really busy, sometimes I just like briefly glance at things and I think, right, and my flight lands at 12:20, so that means it's not leaving till 11:20. And it was actually leaving at 10 to 11. So I woke up in my hotel room right opposite the airport. And then I was like, oh, shit. So I like threw everything in my case, ran up to security and went, can you please let me through? And this American woman went, you're huffing and puffing enough for me to believe you. Yeah. So just go through. So I'm like trying to run through to get to the gate. And then I see that it's a BA flight and I see that it says closed. And I'm just like, fuck. So the plane's going at like 10 to 11 and it's 10:42. And I'm like, fuck. And I feel like I'm having a heart attack. I feel like I'm breathing through a sponge. Like I can't get my breath. And the people behind the desk were like, relax, don't have a heart attack. We'll let you on the plane. So then I just got on the plane like a hot mess. My face was puce and I was panting. And then I had to walk to the back of the plane.
Past like, everyone.
Past everyone sweating behind my knees. Like.
So you were a very literal hot mess.
I was there. A hot mess. I was hot. I was a mess. Yeah, not a sexy hot mess. No, just a I think that's unfit the... woman.
But I think that's the part... we and I struggle with in the hot mess bit is the hot bit, because I'm not sure if that means sort of, because we say like hot second as in quick.
Yes.
Or something, don't we? Or just brief. And I don't know if that's what, or does it mean a sexy mess?
Does it mean, I always think of it to mean slightly sexy, yeah. Dishevelled and sexy.
Yeah, that's fine. But and we are both solid 10 out of 10.
I self-identify as a 10 looks-wise. Same. Yes. Yeah, totally. So
I think that's good. Important.
Yeah. I see myself how I want the world to see me. Yeah. No, I don't. I'm often picking apart everything about me. Depends on the day of the month, actually.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hormonal stuff that gets involved. Sure, I did think, though, true. I did think, like, you know, we often talk about how we never truly realise the limits of human potential until we're tested. And I just never knew I could run that fast until I realised it was going to cost me another £300.
I'm just not built
potential
to run.
Potential unlocked. You're not built
You've
to run.
You've got the tits as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I just can't, unless I'm wearing sort of 6 sports bras, I would not have made that flight.
Right, right. there's a thing, we can talk about boobs.
Yeah, let's then.
I just feel like as a big boobed woman, a big titted.
Yeah, same here. I'm trying to bury it. I am actually wearing a sports bra.
I wear a sports bra a lot.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about this recently because the way you get treated when you have big boobs suggests that you chose to have this body type and this body shape, which is... people think is going to be excellent, you're going to love it, but quite often you're just sort of disparaged and dismissed and instantly sexualized because of them. And it's been a struggle my entire life.
If you literally wear anything, I've got a very high-necked T-shirt on today.
Yes.
And if I wear even a slightly scooped neck, suddenly my boobs are everything and it's just people act like I've put them out on display, whereas women with flatter chest can just wear the sort of skimpy, like all the way down to the belly button thing, and it's not even a thing.
Yes.
I don't know.
It's either frump or floozy. Those seem to be the two options that you have as a like, and today I've gone fitted because I've just started going, I'm sick of just looking like a sack. Like, of just like, just putting on something that, like, high necks look disgusting on me and my head is small, so I just look like this piece stacked on top of a mountain.
So. But 10 out of 10, just to say again, you are 10 out of 10.
10 out
apart from
10.
The pea head.
Apart from the tiny pea head and the overly large chest.
No, it's not overly large. It's lovely.
Well, it is, and it also, when there's a window in which you can enjoy probably having big boobs, but at that point you don't really have the confidence to kind of know or understand. And actually, all that happens now is you exercise and I get athlete's foot tit. That's how I describe it.
That's very
which
good.
Which is where,
the
you know.
The under tit.
Yeah, just like when you run or do
just
exercise.
Constant sweat
it's
under,
sweat
yeah.
And it smells like you're baking bread down there. You're like, what's going on? these are big boob problems, 2019, yeah. Direct
but
from
also,
me.
But also, maybe it's just the terrible sports bras I wear, but like I get sort of almost like carpet burns on my shoulders from under
I've
the straps.
Oh, I've got indentations.
Yeah, oh, constant indentations, but especially if I'm doing something vigorous exercise-wise.
Yes, yeah, you get all the skin come off.
Yes,
that's where
lovely.
My tan's coming off.
So yeah, super sexy having big boobs.
Super sexy. So yeah, it's weird. it's weird. Yeah.
But you said before about you were sick of wearing the sort of shapeless sack thing.
Yeah.
Do you think that you do quite hide away?
I have
your
before.
Body shape.
Yeah,
and stuff?
I have before. My fiance will go, like, you've got such an amazing figure. Why are you trying to cover it up? And
is he Scottish?
You know, yeah,
is that what
yeah.
That was?
That was that. That's what that was. It was an excellent impression of him.
It was
him.
Great. Well, I got it.
Yeah, yeah. But he's always like, look, embrace it. But it's hard because I also know what that brings when you're trying to embrace it, because it looks like you're embracing it. And it looks like you're going, here I am presenting myself as this sort of sexual woman. And when I'm on a panel show, I don't necessarily want to be presenting myself as a sexual woman. I'm going to be presenting myself as a funny woman. And of course I want to look nice. And of course I want to look attractive. But it's such a hard... And sometimes behind those desks, you can just look like a uni boob, just like sat behind, like if the desk comes up high, you're like, oh, I'm just tits on a table
just
now.
Just resting my tits on this table.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, I want to interrupt this amazing chat to do the Clubhouse initiation.
Oh.
Which is just a quick fire round.
Okay.
Essentially. But also, this is a casual fire round, really.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Have you ever been in an ambulance?
Yes.
Cool.
Do you want more?
Yeah, go
on. A couple
on.
Of times. First time I ever went in an ambulance, I think I was like about 7 or 8 years old, and my parents had gone away for an evening to celebrate a birthday or something, and my grandma was looking after me, and she'd picked a punnet of strawberries. And while she was downstairs watching television, I snuck into the kitchen, ate all of the strawberries, and then got very, very sick and was like projectile vomiting red strawberries everywhere.
Oh my God.
So we had to go to the hospital, get in an ambulance. So that was the first time. And it was probably like something out of The Exorcist, I imagine, just this child like sitting up, spewing red everywhere. So
super sexy.
Super sexy, yeah. So that's my first hot mess experience.
Yeah. do you apologise too much?
Probably apologise about the right amount for how much I fuck up.
Did you ever play truant at school?
Yeah, loads.
Badass. How important is money to you?
It's important, yeah. There are definite things where I go, I've made this decision because artistically I want to do a thing, and then I have to go through justifying money or having money or wanting money. I have a hard time accepting money and being okay with money. And I think that's a very working class thing. But it's something that I've been working on over the years. And I've got to a sort of point of going, I deserve, and this is work. And, you know.
I think it's a female thing as well, surely. Like, I get offered to do certain things and I'm like, oh, no, you don't need to pay me. It's awful.
Well, that's happening a lot at the moment. Oh, it's going to be, feel like a rant. Under the guise of for women. So like International Women's Day coming up and then being asked to do loads of free stuff. And you're like, I don't see how this is helping women. This is a for women thing, but you're not, you know, which
paying
fits
women
in,
fairly.
Yeah, fits into a broader thing of me thinking working class women are being priced out of feminism at the moment, which is...
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, all these T-shirts on International Women's Day from like Victoria Beckham and people like that were like £300 each. And you're like, it's become very corporate. In fact, a lot of movements have sort of been co-opted by, you know, corporates who want to kind of affect wokeness. And you go, this is all performative. There's performative and there's demonstrative. And what I'd like to see is demonstrative. Whereas if a coffee company, for example, who does a Pride cup, but they also do 0-hour contracts, I'm like, this is two conflicting messages.
Yeah. Just
so,
jumping on a bandwagon at that
point,
aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is the most romantic thing that's ever happened to you?
Oh,
you did just get engaged last year, right?
I did.
Were you not going to go to that?
Yeah, and I forgot to put my ring on before I came out, so I felt...
Trying to hook up, aren't
trying
you?
To hook up, just in case I see anyone that tickles my fancy. And I've got a tan mark there now as well, so they'll be like, oh my God. Yeah, I did get engaged. It wasn't a, you know, a big organised dance, one of those videos, those engagement videos that you see.
Yeah.
It was just, he asked me... on Christmas Day.
Aww.
And he wrapped the ring up as a present, so I had to say yes or I didn't get anything. but yeah, so that's pretty romantic, but I feel like probably more romantic than that was like maybe the first time he told me he loved me. You know, I have like lots of romantic moments with him, or him sending me flowers or just bringing me a gift or cooking me a dinner or doing something special for me or doing something nice for my family. He does that a lot. He's a very... I'm lucky I've got a good
It was definitely with your fiance, the romantic
moment. Yeah, the romantic moment. Yeah, we've been together for 12 years. And some might think the romance goes when you wake up in the morning and the first conversation you have is with each other's arses as you fart your way through the morning. Some might say the romance is gone, but I don't think so.
I think farting is romantic.
My friend Roisin has always been like, I love that you do that. I feel like it's like really feminist. Like you're like... I'm doing it. And I'm like, I don't even know that there was a motivation behind it, but just like, I'm a human, I exist in the world.
I liked that casual name drop as well.
Oh, right.
Were you guys friends before Game Face?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've known Roisin for...
Amazing. How do you not break
comedy
all the time when you're doing that, working with your friend?
Oh, It's difficult. Like we've just done the second series, so I can't sort of reveal any sort of plot details. But it is, Roisin's writing is exceptional and really tight. And then, but she's very generous on set in that she lets people play and come up with their own stuff as well. So sometimes people do stuff that you don't expect, and you...
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, because there's quite a lot of comedians on set.
Yes.
And so is it a lot of improv?
The script is there, and then we'll do those versions, and then there's kind of a bit of play as well. On the day, you know, Roisin and Chappers, who's the director as well, are kind of like, if it doesn't feel right, then we can move it around and play with it. And sometimes you've got to roll with the punches a little bit because you never know what's going to happen. So yes, there's definitely play, and there's definitely it's a joy to be around. There's a lot of really, really good stand-ups that are good comedic actors.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always work the same way. If you act, it doesn't always mean that you can be good at comedy or do stand-up.
Yeah.
So the stand-ups that are very good at acting are, you know, you've got people like Alfie Brown and Alistair Green. And like in the first series, there was like so many comics sort of peppered throughout the show.
Yeah,
and in this series as well, I think like Felicity Ward's in a couple of episodes as well. Like lots of, Roche has exceptional taste, you know, so she's...
That's why you're in it.
That's why
I'm going to come back to your acting in a minute because I got distracted. We're still in the quickfire, Tiff.
Okay, right. Sorry.
What is your favourite takeaway?
Oh, sushi, probably.
Great.
Yeah.
Good choice. Have you ever lost a pet?
Yes, I have. Two goldfish that I had when I was 14 called Blackjack and Fruit Salad.
Oh, after cute the sweets. Name.
Yeah. For my 40, I think it was my 14th birthday, I had girls, had a sleepover, and we sprayed lots of like Jubri perfume from the body shop and lots of impulse body spray and hairspray. And I think we choked them with fumes.
Oh my God, you killed the goldfish.
Because we went out and when we came back, they were floating on top of the fish tank. So, yeah. We smoked them out, which is quite
I'm
terrifying.
So sorry,
it's funny. It was funny. It is funny. I mean,
did you laugh at the time? Or?
I think at the time I was like,
I hope you cried.
I don't think I cried because they are goldfish. Is
that
really
is
mean
a
of
really
me?
Shit pet.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
When you were a kid, did you believe everything you were told?
No, I always questioned.
Oh, always
pretty much, I was, yeah, that was my favourite word when I was at why. I was one of those annoying kids. I got sent out of an English class once for asking why too much and made
just
to stand
over
in
and
the
over
corridor.
Again. Were you trying to wind the teacher up?
That was actually, I was about 14 then, so yes, I was.
You were just being a dick.
But I was that, I did kind of like question stuff a lot as a kid.
Oh, that's probably the best way.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure there was a point where I sort of believed in. I mean, I did believe in magical things and I had a sense of adventure and I had imagination, but I did used to ask a lot of questions.
Like, how the fuck did this unicorn get itself a dick on its forehead?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Why has this horse got a dick? Yeah.
Finally, related, have you ever been offered an orgy?
Oh, no. Not that I'm aware of, but maybe I'm not good at picking up the sexual signals.
This is where we're going next with the Hot Mess Clubhouse.
No. Oh, no. I would be. Sorry. I would not be up for it.
Oh, rude.
Yeah.
Just taking my top off here, put it back on.
Oh, well, speaking of rude, I got accused of kink shaming on a...
Did you?
I was selling a pair of shoes on eBay and someone messaged me going, have you got any with grubby footbeds? Oh. And I posted it like... going, this guy definitely wants to wank in my shoes, right? And then people were coming back, like, and it was like, oh, God. Like, and then people were like, don't kink shame. And I'm like, this isn't kink shaming. This person's kink is messaging unsuspecting women and telling them what their kink is.
Exactly.
Because it was DA.
That's another power move.
Yeah.
It's a sort of dark yeah. dick pic version.
I'm coming into your inbox to tell you that I want to wank in your shoes, you know, so, but yeah, so it was like kink shaming and I'm like, that's not a thing, sorry. Like, you know, have your kink, whatever it is, that's fine, you know, but don't try and...
Do it with consenting adults.
Yeah, do it with someone who consents to it.
Go to a foot kink website or a forum or something, do it there.
Go to Grubby Footbeds. Perfect. Go to a charity shop. Like,
yeah, set up
knock that, one out there, mate.
Set up that website, Grubby Foot.
Footbeds.com.
That's so niche. Anyway, well done. You have survived the initiation. You're now part of the Hot Mess Clubhouse. And there is a goodie bag.
Oh, is there?
Just a little welcome bag.
Oh, thanks.
It's just chocolate and booze.
Has it got a Care Bear on the front?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy You Day.
Ah, yes. I will accept. Oh, is this what Diane Abbott was drinking on the train?
Yes, mate. Is this? Do you want one now?
Part
it's 1 o'clock.
Of me is like, yeah, I sort of do.
Shall we? 75. Are you performing tonight, right?
I'm performing tonight, but I didn't drive here. Fine. And so this will wear off by the time I
oh yeah
I need to
for sure
go anywhere. What chocolate? What else is in here? Oh, squashies. I like those. Yeah, I'm into that.
Are you into chocolate?
Yeah.
Sweets?
Yeah, I'm into
good.
Chocolate.
Okay, so I made some right decisions,
yeah. And depending on time of the month, I can get quite animalistic about it.
Yeah, same.
Like, there's just my premenstrual and then also, like, the first 2 days of my period, I'm like, I'm going to have it.
Yeah, I don't recognise myself in the mirror and for a whole day and I'll be like, what is going on with me? And then I realise it's my period's coming tomorrow sort of thing.
I get PMDD.
Which is
premenstrual dysphoria disorder, and
is that a thing or is something self diagnosed?
No, it's a thing. Yeah, it's but there could probably be a bit more research on it. And I'm someone who's tried to fix it myself by trying to regulate my hormones with stuff like starflower.
What it is.
So it's about a week before my period, I get like a depression, but it's like beyond a depression. It's like the sort of heaviest version that you can have of it, and I get like sort of suicidal ideation. I'm like, I'm gonna go and drive off a cliff, like that kind of, that sort of level of, I'm gonna plunge a knife in my chest. It's a bottoming out. It's a feeling like, and I had depression in my 20s as well, and in my late 20s, like in my early 20s really bad, and it came back in my late 20s, like, it, you know, but this isn't kind of like a low level feeling of dread, which the other thing was, this is like a, I need to end it now type feeling.
God,
so it's like, yeah, probably maybe closer to a postpartum. Like, I've seen it kind of discussed with like a lot of those message boards and stuff with the similarity. But yes, it's premenstrual taken to the most extreme degree it can be taken.
It's also terrifying that hormones can be so, like, just makes you realise the rest of the month how lucky we are to have sort of a
balance.
Hopefully balanced hormonal.
Well, here's the thing as well. I think it sort of saved my life realising it was that.
Right.
Because in the moment where you feel like that and you feel like there's no way out and there's no resolving or way out of this situation, knowing that I go, oh, when is it? This is a week before. So just get through to, if you just get through today, just get through today, you're going to be fine. And then tomorrow you're going to feel a lot better, and the day after you're going to feel a lot better again.
So you must have to track your periods quite
closely. So I have to track my periods now. And also I stopped taking the pill sort of in my 20s because I didn't like what it was kind of doing to me. So I feel like maybe PMDD is one of the things that is kind of prevented by the pill. I don't know. All I know is that it sort of got worse as I was in my late 30s and I, to the point of me going, I need to do something about this. And then kind of, you know, and then sometimes there would just be a massive moment of relief when I got my period and it would kind of all drop away. So I think that was the first time I realised that it was connected, and then I went investigating it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so far I've just done, you know, just done the thing of like kind of trying to regulate my hormones and starflower oil, which is higher in that particular hormone than oil of evening primrose, seems to have done it, you know. But I've got a couple of friends now who are like, oh, I think I have that and I have this. And I'm like, yeah, you know.
It's probably very common, but it's another thing that we don't talk about.
Well,
couldn't possibly mention period stuff.
Yeah, all of women's sort of medical conditions are so under-researched and so under, everything is geared towards men's bodies. You know, it's just another one of those sort of like things that in life we kind of go, around going, oh, right, well, no one knows about this because we haven't spent time. So,
and we test everything on men, of course.
Yeah.
So we know how it reacts.
Because men are neutral, men are default, and that's, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah. You mentioned having depression in your
20s.
Yeah. I kind of think there's some kind of correlation with funniness and depression. Do you feel like there is that link? I feel like it's quite a common funny people. Or maybe, I don't know if it's a chicken egg thing.
Yeah.
Whether you reached for comedy because you had this inclination towards depression, or whether being a funny person is a sort of insecure thing anyway.
Yeah, I think there's a cut, like a lot of the people that I know doing stand-up sort of stems from your childhood, or stuff that came up through your childhood, and your need to be heard and seen and have your ideas heard, and also to make situations okay. Situations that are happening as a kid that you want to make everyone in the room feel comfortable and okay, so you become this,
you know, frenetic.
Yeah, that's like a lot of performers, that's not just stand up. But I definitely think the depression, I think like stand up is like the best form of therapy that sort of exists. Like also it's philosophical, it's the greatest study of yourself and moral relativity and who we all are and our place in the world. And so I think it's quite therapeutic in a lot of ways for stand-ups to, you know, I think there's a line in Always Sunny in Philadelphia where Sweet D is doing stand-up, and they're like, you're just on the line between suicidal and something else, which is where most stand-ups thrive. On the line between, yeah.
I really enjoyed her stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
That show is
And
amazing.
The other guy, landslide. I can't remember. There's a line. Yeah, there's a line. I should look it up. But it's the sweet spot for stand-ups. And it's true, because I think sometimes if you find dark stuff funny, which I do, you know, then that's where the humour comes from, it. Because that's what comedy does. It shines a light in these dark corners. Because if we didn't laugh at it, we'd just cry relentlessly. So I feel like out of that, people, sometimes you're writing when you're in it, sometimes you're writing from the other side of it. But I did a show in 2014 at Edinburgh called Optimist, which was sort of talked about that and the fact that there'd been some suicide attempts. But I thought I was so far past it. But then doing the show every night sort of felt like I was reliving it a little bit. And then that year, like Robin Williams killed himself, and it just seemed to be everywhere. And I felt very much like I was like reliving this thing. I was like, I'm reliving this sort of trauma and playing it out. And I was like, I don't know how. I'm sort of glad I did it. I'm glad I spoke about some of the stuff. But I think if I was to do it again, I would have a better sense of separation from myself and the material. But that's hard, because stand-up is, if you do the kind of stand-up that I do, it's kind of deeply personal anyway.
Yeah.
So
were you always funny? Do you remember being funny as a child?
Yeah, some of my school friends are like, you were always funny. I always remember you being funny. And it's kind of like a defense mechanism as well, and to, you know, stop you getting picked on, to stop you, you know, you've got to be, you know.
Do you think it gave you an advantage in life? Because I think sometimes as well, being funny, I'm thinking of men, like with funny women, I mean, I'm not comedian funny, but I'm funny. And I've found that men find that a bit threatening sometimes, like we're on their turf.
I mean, definitely when I, and not my fiance who I'm with now, but definitely when I started in stand up, you know, I was seeing a couple of actors, a few actors, which is my own fault, really.
What were you thinking?
Yeah. But often what they'd get is like, well, if you can do it, it can't be that hard. If you're good at it, I've watched a lot of Bill Hicks. There was a lot of that going around. Like, I can memorize Bill Hicks. But also, all of these actors took themselves so seriously. There was no way you were ever going to be like, your level of self-importance. You know, you need to be able to laugh at yourself. Sometimes you need to be the butt of the joke. A lot of the time, it needs to be important that you can. Funny is not about being right all the time. Sometimes it's about being right, or sometimes it's about kind of admitting that we're all flawed and that you're the dick. You can't always be the hero in these stories, is what I'm saying.
Sure.
And so many of these kind of actors are caught up in their own ego. So yeah, I think they did find it threatening. I think they did find if you're in the room, like, you know, kind of snapping, giving all the funny stuff, they're like, well, where's my seat? How do I jostle for position here?
Yeah, it's that thing of saying they want someone with a sense of humour, but what they mean is that will laugh at their jokes.
Oh, yeah. I definitely, I have friends who just relentlessly date women who they go, oh, she's so smart. And I'm like, what you mean to say there is, and this is someone who dates younger women, like kind of relentlessly, like 10, 12, 15 years younger. She's so smart, and I'm not doubting the woman is smart, but what he always means by that is she just sits there and doesn't say anything while you just kind of do your polemic at her, and she nods, like, you know.
Yeah. But Paul, is Paul your fiancé?
Yeah.
He doesn't, he likes you being funny, presumably.
Yeah, he's always been like, he's protective of me. He loves it. And sometimes we'll, like, he'll direct my shows, and sometimes we'll go toe to toe and disagree on material. And we have these kind of like rigorous intellectual discussions about what's going to work and what isn't going to work. And he can kind of see it from an outside view of like, your brain works quite quickly and makes these steps, and not everyone in the audience is always there when you've made those steps and those leaps. So he likes to stand back and look at the work, but he's not threatened by. Also, I'm not someone who's always on. I'm not someone who feels the need to be in the room and like,
Yeah.
I'm not that person. Sometimes I'm like, I feel like being serious and I want to talk about this thing and I want to get into that. So it's just another aspect to my personality. But I'm, you know, in the moment funny when I need and want to be. But sometimes that pressure to be kind of the entertaining person, you know, like I had someone at a funeral.
Oh, no.
My uncle's funeral, come over and she was like, so what, you know, what I love is being CV'd at a funeral. What television shows is it that I've seen you in? Are you going to tell some, I'm like, at a funeral? No, I'm not, you know.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No. Like, and so that kind of pressure to be entertaining is sometimes a bit like, I'm not in the mood for this. But, you know, around my family, I'm going to be funny. We all have a laugh. Like, my family are funny as well.
Will you do a speech at your wedding?
I might do a speech at my own wedding.
Do the funny thing at your wedding?
Yeah, I probably will.
Yeah.
I probably will.
And then, of course, you will give up your career and become a housewife.
Yeah, exactly. I'll start doing all the cooking. He does all the cooking. I mean, I
But speaking
I don't
of
shit.
Your career, you've done some awesome things, haven't you? God.
I've been lucky.
Yeah.
I say I've been lucky, but yeah.
Not lucky. You've been amazing and you're incredibly talented. Let's say that.
Yeah.
10 out of 10 sure. On the career front as well. What's been your favourite thing to work on? Can you name one?
It's hard because they all fulfil very different aspects of what I like. I mean, I love acting because I feel like it's like trying on lives. That's part of the appeal as an actor, to kind of go, could I go and do this thing? And what would I go and live in Louisiana for 6 months and just do this, you know? Like, is this the right, like you get to sort of try things on. You get to try on being another person. And I find that quite appealing. So in terms of those, I mean, I've loved working on Game Face because it's great seeing Roisin's brilliant ideas
so
come
good.
To
I relate very hard.
Yeah, come to fruition, and we are close, and I, you know, her heart and soul is in that, and it's a real thing that I think it connects, people connect with it so hard.
Yeah,
because it is a thing,
and
that
you
people,
two on screen make me shriek.
Oh, that's
laughter.
Good. That's
it's so good.
Good. Well, and that's a genuine, that's really nice when you get to have that kind of moment of genuine, that's who we are to each other, you know. So I've really enjoyed working on that, and there's so many funny people on that. People Just Do Nothing has been, you know, it's going to be what it's one of those cultural kind of
so good.
It's one of those cultural moments that you're like, I originally auditioned for the first series, right. And then for Roche. And I wasn't right for that part, but I did do a really good audition, and then they just brought me back for the next series, and we sort of created the character together a bit, really. There's lots of improv on that show. There's the script, which is probably about, I'd say, about 50 to 60% of what makes it on screen. And then the rest, especially with my character, a lot of it is coming up with it in the moment. So I've really enjoyed that, and I feel like, it's again, people connect to it because it's real. It's not punching down. It's about real people with like dreams and hopes, and everyone relates to that. And at what point do you give up your dreams and hopes?
Yeah.
And similarly to Game Face has that kind of idea as well, as like, at what point do you have to accept that for you it's not working, or this isn't, you know.
But it's so nice, and it feels like a sort of revolutionary time on telly that we are putting unlikable people on screen.
Yes.
That are so likable.
Yes, yeah.
But especially
flawed,
with women.
Flawed people.
Yes.
Women have for a long time not allowed to be sort of flawed.
Well, the only flaw we were allowed was to be a bit clumsy.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Trip up, fall over,
exactly.
That old
adorably.
Classic rom-com thing.
Yeah.
And then also my shows that I've written that I'm sort of really proud of, Bombshell, and my show Seven, actually, my last, you know, the show before that, like I've written these things that I think, oh, these are pieces of work that I've done that will, you know, articles, you know, there's moments
yes,
that come
very
up.
very multi-talented, Tiff.
Well, one of the pieces, I wrote a piece about having an abortion when I was 17, yes. which seems to have connected with, because I was very real about my, or honest about my emotions and the details of it, which I think people sort of connected with. I feel like there's a real personal thing when women come and go, that piece of writing or that bit of stand-up that you did, I love it so much because I connected to it. And so that's one of the things that with acting, you don't get as much unless you've written it. And I'm sort of working on my own show at the moment.
Oh, that's
so
exciting.
You know, yeah. So hopefully if we get that, if it gets made the way we want to make it, then there will be moments in that, because I do want to talk quite a lot about my experience of being a stepmother and mothering in all its aspects, which is what my new show in Edinburgh is going to be about.
Mother.
Because I'm a stepmother. So, yeah, I feel like I want to talk about the different ways families can come about and respect that's given, respect that's earned. This is what the show will be about. The show
Incredible.
That we're developing at the moment, the TV show and my Edinburgh show. So,
Well, fingers crossed that that all goes amazingly. I better let you leave now. Thank you so much for joining me today, Tiff. Is there anything else you would like to plug before we wrap things up?
I did just burp into the microphone. We discussed this at the top.
Sorry. I made you drink gin. It was going to happen.
So let's plug Mother, because I'm doing previews of Mother all around up until August, and then in August at the Monkey Barrel at the Edinburgh Fringe, and then in September, like September 16th, I'm doing it at the Underbelly, Winchester Discovery Centre on the 28th. I've got a few tour dates around, and I'm doing some in America. I don't know how many people listen in America, but I'm doing a bunch there as well. So
pretty fucking busy then.
Pretty busy. Yeah. I've got a website, tiffstevenson.co.uk, which hasn't been updated since the Brexit negotiations started. And my Twitter at Tiff Stevenson and Instagram, Tiff Stevenson Comic.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for that. That was absolutely amazing. And thank you everyone out there for joining me. Please rate and subscribe if you have a minute. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening, excellent humans. Next week on the podcast, we have the amazingly funny and lovely actor, Kimberly Nixon. Please do join us for the silliness. Bye.
I just spilt gin and tonic on me.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.